One is the bank emphasized in its statement the extent to which inflation is a global phenomenon and that central banks around the world are grappling with it together using the same tool.
Justin Trudeau, you are, and your spending, your out of control debt and taxation are leading us headlong into a full scale financial crisis, and I will not let you do it.
Just some of the political reaction today to the Bank of Canada's announcement that it is hiking its key lending rate by 25 basis points. It now sits at 4.75%. That is a lot higher than it was a year ago. The bank had pressed pause on those hikes at the end of January to see the full effect of them. But based on, among other things, bigger than expected economic growth in the first quarter of 2023, they did decide to hike that rate today. Let's unpack some of that political reaction now with our Daily Debrief panel.
The Daily Debrief.
With me this afternoon, Michelle Cadario, CEO of Vanguard Strategy Incorporated and former Deputy Chief of Staff to Prime Minister Paul Martin and BC Premier Christy Clark. Tom Mulcair is CTV's political analyst and former NDP leader. And Corey Tenike is former Director of Communications to Prime Minister Stephen Harper and now co-founder and CEO of Rubicon Strategy. Hi, everybody. Good to have you here this afternoon. Michelle, I'll start with you. I was struck, and we played just a snippet of it, but it was a lengthy press conference from the finance minister and a lengthy address to caucus from Pierre Poilievre. I was struck at sort of like the two very different ways to approach what is a big deal to Canadians. The government kind of saying, stay calm, we're near the end, other countries are going through this. And then Mr. Poilievre saying, this does really suck, and it's the government's fault that it sucks. Which message do you think is politically more strategically beneficial?
Well, I think right now it's probably to Mr. Poilievre's benefit to be able to be out there and to be trying to suggest or infer that there's actually something that Canada alone can do to bring down Canadians, the inflation rate for Canadians, so that their homes are more affordable, that their mortgages aren't so taxing, and that month to month things aren't just as bad. So, you know, because it's an easy, in opposition, the only benefit of it is that you can actually promise the world and promise the moon and not actually have to deliver or come up with anything concrete. You know, I think Minister Freeland in that clip said it well. It's not like this is a unique situation in Canada, unfortunately. It is a global phenomenon and something after, you know, the pandemic, that it seems that economies just aren't responding the way that they used to when, you know, central banks raise their interest rates. We're seeing it all over the globe. And so, you know, economists are kind of confounded by it. Politicians are frustrated by it. But right now, Canadians just want an answer to it. And, you know, a blank promise seems to be an easy way, an easy thing to do. And so I think Mr. Poilievre, that he's saying something that's welcome, though probably not in the long term actually useful.
It's so interesting, Corey, because all of what Minister Freeland said, you know, much of it is true. It is happening elsewhere. It is worse in some jurisdictions. Central banks are having a tough time. But listening to it today, it was like, oh, man, I'm not sure politically, like whether it's true is okay, one thing, sure. Whether it comforts anybody or is politically smart is like a whole other thing. I just feel like people took this news really hard today, and to hear that it might be worse somewhere else might ring a bit hollow.
Yeah, well, because you're not living somewhere else; you're living here. So it's you know, it's very ineffective communication, in my view. I think leading a little bit more with compassion about what this means for people is probably a better place to start the messaging. I also think that, you know, there's very good questions. You know, Kathleen has brought this up a number of times on our panel as to, you know, whether the central bank, by raising interest rates, can actually address some of these inflationary pressures that are coming from outside our borders. No amount of raising interest rates in Canada is going to solve the war in Ukraine, which is pushing food prices higher on a global basis, or supply chain issues related to Taiwan and China, or higher cost pressures associated with onshoring manufacturing into higher cost jurisdictions like North America. So, like, all of these things are creating inflationary pressure that Canada raising interest rates isn't going to affect. It's not going to stop that. So the question is, you know, what portion of inflation is being driven by consumer behavior here inside Canada? And I think there's very hard questions being asked of the central bank as to whether or not what they're doing is appropriate.
Two things on that, Tom. It's difficult, I think, for the government to wade into asking those questions, which I think Corey is absolutely right to point out, because they've had to kind of combat all the stuff Pierre Poilievre said in the leadership, which he no longer says, about the Bank of Canada's governor. And they've really tried to draw a line saying, oh, we don't touch that stuff. They're independent of us. But secondly, I think there are, in that same vein, there should be some good accountability questions for Pierre Poilievre as well, because if so much of inflation, as we know, isn't driven solely by what's happening domestically, pinning all the blame, though there should be some hard questions, again, of the prime minister on his level of spending, pinning all the blame on him isn't factually accurate either.
I think you're going to find you have three people on your panel today who are in violent agreement about something, Vashi, because I was listening to Michelle before and I couldn't agree with her more. You know, the economies are not responding the way that they used to. I agree with that. But then the question becomes, so why are we trying to use formulas from another era? And that goes to Corey's point. You know, he rhymed off a series of things that have nothing to do with the policies or the politics of Canada or the government or the Bank of Canada. And it's almost, you know, for the average Canadian, this is where we tend to get a disconnect between people who spend all their time looking at the books and looking at the theory of this stuff and the average person just saying, you're telling me that my mortgage is going up, not what I thought it was, but it's going up even more because the economy's doing well? Explain that to me again. And I think that that's where Trudeau's going to have a hard time. Poilievre does have a valid point on one thing. When he talks about the spending and that there's no longer even a horizon for getting anywhere close to balancing the books, of course that plays part of it. And the average person can understand that as well. If you're spending so much and you've printed so much money and it's virtually out of control, then of course it's going to have an inflationary effect. Trudeau already ran up before the pandemic hit, he had already run up $100 billion in new deficit spending with barely anything to show for it. And then, of course, it was hundreds and hundreds of billions during the pandemic. So they're not even able to show you a timeline or horizon where they're going to start addressing that. In fact, they started mentioning it in the fall, but then they went all in. They said, you know what, let's have this fight with Poilievre. We'll say that he's all about zero deficit, that he's going to cut all our social programs, he's going to cut government spending, and we'll say we're here to help the Canadian families. Where Trudeau's not going to be able to make that argument is with families that can't afford their mortgage anymore, that are having trouble putting food on the table. So it becomes, again, a theoretical debate that he might be able to win. They're going to go after Poilievre about saying, oh, buy Bitcoin, it's a hedge against inflation. All this stuff is being lined up for the next campaign. But for right now, I'm with Corey when he says, start talking about the effect on the average Canadian family with several kids and can't even afford the normal stuff that they had before.
Yeah, Michelle, last word to you. That's why I brought it up, because I listened to the entire press conference from Minister Freeland. And it's kind of rare that she does one like that right now. And the lead, she got to the point where she said, it sucks and I'm sympathizing. But it wasn't the lead. It took a while to get there. The lead was the fundamentals of our economy are strong. Again, true, but maybe not what people want to hear right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that, you know, what Minister Freeland was probably trying to do is lower expectations that there was any kind of further money that was going to be able to go and help Canadians, right? And to help help those who need it now, or that there's going to be any kind of relief coming from the government. So I suspect that that's what it was. I agree with Corey. It could, you know, you should always lead with compassion and empathy, because these are very tough times and there are real families who are struggling right across the country who this news is going to be, you know, devastating. And, you know, for first time home buyers, it may very well mean you're not buying a home again this year. It's really hard. And so, I think that, the government is going to try and, you know, hopefully maybe there's something to focus really narrowly on those who absolutely need some help. But they just don't want to build up expectations for a whole bunch.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. The Daily Debrief panel is sticking around on the other end of that break. We'll talk a little bit about how David Johnston did during that 3+ hour testimony yesterday. Back in a moment. Stay right there.
Oh.
Will we put an end to the act and fire this rapporteur and call a public inquiry now?
Let me read a quote on the former governor general. This is a very qualified individual, and frankly, I haven't heard anybody question his integrity, and I have no reason to do for that, Mr. Speaker, with the leader of the opposition.
It is so tragic that that prime minister has destroyed the reputation of the special
When I chose to appoint him to be an independent expert, I didn't hold against him the fact that he had been appointed by conservatives past.
So that's a little bit about how David Johnston, former Governor General David Johnston's testimony played out in the House of Commons. Here's a taste of how that testimony went.
Quite apart from changes of positions by people on whether my integrity evaporated 3 or 4 years ago for some reason with a change of government, I'm anxious that we get to the real issue here, which is foreign interference.
How on earth are we to get the answers we need to play our constitutional role and hold this government accountable?
We will be looking very carefully at the oversight bodies.
So how did it go, and did that testimony change anything? The Daily Debrief panel is here to talk about that. Corey Tenike, Tom Mulcair, and Michelle Cordero. Corey, I'll start with you. First of all, on the question of how did it go, do you think David Johnston did himself any favors with the testimony?
No, I don't think he did. It really is tragic to see, you know, this man's reputation sort of get shredded in the way it is. But like, I think it's inevitable, you know, in terms of the role that he's been placed in, that that's going to be the case. And I don't think he did himself any favors in explaining, you know, how he came to some of the conclusions that he did without seeming to have talked to some pretty key people. Like, you know, if you didn't talk to Han Dong, how can you just give him a clean bill of health? And, you know, how much consultation have you done with the opposition? If you, you know, talk to Aaron O'Toole after the report is written and it's being translated, like these sorts of things all kind of undermine his credibility, and their decisions that he obviously made in the role. I also think there's like sometimes people just need to retire. I had memories of Robert Mueller and the Mueller probe into Trump, where you had somebody who had a great reputation, who was brought out of retirement, and when he went to go and testify before the Senate, looked like he probably should not be in a role like that anymore, that he's sort of past his prime. And I think there's an element of that with Johnston as well. I think he's probably not up to the job.
Tom, what do you think about that?
I agree with Corey, and it's with a heavy heart, because I know David Johnston well. I know him personally, and he's somebody I really like. And he really has done great service for Canada. It's very difficult to watch him in this position. Some of the things he said yesterday were frankly bewildering. Let's just take one example. The very specific case of Aaron O'Toole that was just evoked by Corey. Mr. O'Toole found out, and he spoke about it in the House right after the tabling of the report by Mr. Johnson. He found out from CSIS that there was a concerted effort by the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese government, to go after him, his party. They had a disinformation campaign. They were targeting conservative candidates during the last election. When that was asked of Mr. Johnson, well, how come that didn't make it into your report? He almost suggested that maybe that was somehow Aaron O'Toole's fault, but of course O'Toole had only just found out about it. Mm-hmm. But what's most important is that in his report, Vashi, Mr. Johnston had said this, that there was no indication that either Mr. Trudeau or any of his ministers had failed to act on any information with regard to Chinese government interference in Canadian elections. How could he say that and then say that he didn't even know about what happened with O'Toole? It simply proves the point that several of us who are lawyers have been making since the beginning. If you're going to affirm something like that without cross-examining any of the witnesses, without putting any of them under oath, you better be darn sure that you've been given everything. But everybody that he spoke to as he prepared that report was either a longtime Liberal donor, like Sheila Block, or was an employee of Justin Trudeau. And I doubt very much that Katie Telford, to give one example, was going to look at Mr. Johnston and say, oh, yeah, there was this case regarding O'Toole, and we didn't do anything about it because we thought maybe that would be to our advantage and not to the advantage of the Conservatives. So we prefer not to mention that. Of course, nobody's going to tell him that. But he put together a report in which he made affirmations that are not supported, we now know, by the facts. And that's where this thing falls apart. And that's why I am sad. And that's why it is with a heavy heart, because I do watch a great Canadian who's had an amazing career, done superb things. Right now, I believe, and it's a heavy way to say it, but I believe he's being used in this instance, because Mr. Trudeau needed a shield. He's decided he doesn't want a commission of inquiry. And unfortunately, David Johnson's being used to that end.
Do you think there's any way, Michelle, that he can stay on in this role and sort of command the authority that it might necessitate?
Well, you know, I actually think that the opposition has done such a disservice to the entire process that they've actually kind of given a leg for him to stay, because all of their, you know, suggestions of his close association with the Trudeau family, which is bogus and very curious at best, has just made it into a much more partisan exercise than the actual substance that's there. You know, there were very legitimate questions that he actually couldn't answer yesterday. So on substance, it was kind of a bit worrisome. There were some troubling things about the timing of stuff, of stuff that he seemed to not have actually read, or he didn't have access to, or the sequence of events in terms of when Mr. O'Toole had had his meeting with the CSIS director versus when Mr. Johnson put together his report. But right now, there's such a cloak of partisanship over the whole thing that I think that it's just going to be kind of gummed up and dismissed by Canadians in terms of what that process actually is or what it isn't, instead of getting to the root of the substance of it. You know, I think that the other thing I would just say is the suggestion that anybody, whether it was Katie Telford or any Liberal or any Conservative or anybody in the House of Commons or working for them, would ever intentionally support the Chinese government from interfering in Canadian elections is absolutely ridiculous. I think that we need to move on from that. There's not a chance, and there's not a chance that anybody knew that there had been any kind of a threat to a member of Parliament's family or not who is elected to politics. I really believe that there is far more integrity in the politicians there of all stripes. So again, I think if you put that stuff aside, there's some really strong and important issues that actually have to be faced. But I think it's become the whole thing has become such a mockery because of this suggestion of his association with Mr. Trudeau, that's a rabbit hole that everybody's now just saying the whole process is nonsense and nobody's going to pay it much attention.
Do you think that's true, Corey? And if it is, then is there anything left to kind of rescue the process, or is it kind of dead in the water?
Well, I think it's kind of dead in the water, but I also think when you're looking at some of the polling that's come out now, that it's irrelevant in the context of the things like we were just talking about, like interest rates and really serious issues that Canadians are grappling with around affordability, hospital ERs being closed over the summer in many provinces. Like you're seeing things that are much more important to the public than this issue. People who are conservative tend to think there's been a cover-up. People who are liberal tend to think that there's nothing to see here. I don't think anyone buys, to Michelle's point, that the government, you know, was in cahoots with the Chinese Communist Party to subvert elections. I think there's a pretty compelling narrative around government incompetence within the intelligence community and how it interacts with that and et cetera. But I think a lot of Canadians would like to see the House of Commons focused on issues that have a more direct bearing on their own lives.
We shall see. Goodness knows what happens to these public hearings that are getting started next month. Yes. I'll leave the conversation there. I really appreciate all of you joining the discussion. Corey Tenike, Tom Mulcair, and Michelle Cadario, our Daily Debrief panel today.